Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Well, a steamy Sunday morning in the Capital District. It's supposed to be. It's kind of nice now, but it's 10 o'clock in the morning. It's supposed to, today and the next few days, get up into the 90s and heat index high, humidity. So hydrate, as they say. If you have a pool, sit out by the pool, take a dip, and fire up your Capital OTB account on your phone or your tablet or whatnot, and play along with us. A little dip in the pool, a little head into the family room, watch some TV this afternoon. I'll be on OTB Live at 12:30, 12:45 or so again this afternoon. Hopefully everybody's watching yesterday because, man, it was a nice day of stakes action. We'll take a look at that in a moment. We'll do a little handicapping as well as we usually do on a Sunday morning. And then towards the end of the program, we will be joined by our friend Jenny Reese, who handles media for Kentucky HBPA, and so she fills us in on all things Kentucky, and all things Kentucky today includes the opening of Ellis Park. So I thought we'd reach out to Jenny and get a little kind of preview of the Ellis meet. And over the last few years, it's become kind of a fun meet. The two-year-olds down there have tended to do very well as we've moved into the end of the year and started to sort the two-year-olds out, but they have nice turf racing there as well. It's become kind of a fun meet. And if you've been listening over the last couple of weeks, they've been talking about Churchill closing up their backstretch section because they're going to work on their track a little bit. There's going to be some track maintenance and whatnot done. So they've closed their backstretch, which means everybody has to find other spots. And Brad Cox has said he'll have a lot more horses at Saratoga this year. But he's got a string at Ellis. Chad Brown is going to have a string at Ellis, I read. So, again, we'll talk a little Ellis with Jenny Reese coming up a little bit later on. Don't forget, today here at the Clubhouse Racebook, Match Bet promotion. We'd love to have you stop on by and enjoy the Match Bet. Today, Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Come on down, enjoy the horse racing action. A little extra fun with the Match Bet. And it's been a fun weekend of promos. Friday, we had the bankroll and had a nice day. I'm glad it was Friday instead of yesterday. I did okay, but it just Friday, everything really fell into place, and it was a nice afternoon. So everybody on the bankroll team, again, walked away with just under $50, $53. Everybody on the team got, each individual got $50 and free money from Capital OTB. Don't forget, we'll have more of the bankrolls as we lead into Saratoga and at Saratoga as well. And the syndicate specials on the weekends will be something you want to check out also. So you can keep up with all the promos and events via CapitalOTB.com. All right, let's get into our stakes preview because, again, there are some nice stakes. And I said it when I had Joe Christofek on yesterday. I said the Churchill meet this spring has been fun. And I think a lot of the stakes action, some of the two-year-old races, you know, non-stakes even, are going to play into Saratoga. And so it's been fun to watch and kind of keep track of. And I think that continued yesterday. I'm sure we'll see some of these performers up at Saratoga. I'm not sure about the winner of the Stephen Foster, but we will watch here. It was just a fabulous performance. Maxfield now 7 wins and 8 starts. Maxfield, the number 8 horse here, as you can see, takes charge. He made a big sweeping move on the turn, too. He was kind of sitting, as they came into the turn, a little bit back in the pack, and you thought, boy, he's got some work to do. Big sweeping move and went by, and Warrior's Charge winds up running second, and Sprawl, who I thought was a little bit interesting in this race, runs third, so it would have been a little better exacto-wise for me if Sprawl had held on, but I always root for our friend Marshall Graham in 10 Strike Racing, so Warrior's Charge. And it was interesting, Warrior's Charge, before the race in the paddock, or in the winner's circle at one point, I think Brad Cox had won an earlier race, and so they said, you have Warrior's Charge coming up, what's the game plan? He said, we're going. Last time at Lone Star, we were off the pace, that didn't work out. We're sent, and Warrior's Charge broke a little badly, and so that didn't all work out, but made a nice stretch run. So sometimes you go to plan B. Plan B works out okay, because I'm sure they were happy with the second place finish to Maxfield, because they weren't going to catch Maxfield yesterday. Chart margin was 3.25 lengths. Went off as a 2-5 favorite. A solid 103 buyer. So now the last couple of races, he's gotten to triple-digit buyer area. And again, he's now 7-8 overall. A four-year-old, though, with only 8 starts. So there have been some issues with the horse that have caused them to take some delays in the career, or some time off here and there. And because of that, Brendan Walsh, I read in the racing form, that he said something to the effect of, we have some ideas of where we want to go and what our game plan is, but we're not going to put it out there and tempt fate just yet. We want to see how the horses come out of the race and whatnot. So as I say, I'm not sure Maxfield will play into Saratoga, but I won't be shocked if he does. I think they just want a few days, and maybe we'll get a better idea, you know, in a couple of days or a week or so as to what the plans may be for Maxfield going forward. But certainly in the handicap division, he's, if not the guy, one of the guys at this point. Love to see him up at Saratoga, you know, Whitney or this year the Jockey Club. But that has yet to be determined. But it was a really nice performance yesterday. As I say, you were kind of like, on the backstretch, he's got some work to do. And when he got going on the turn, and Travis Stone's call was great. Travis Stone said, oh, he's moving. He's fifth, he's fourth, he's third, he's second, and now he's in the lead. And that was pretty much how it happened. It was a big move on the turn. And then, again, you saw the stretch run there where he just widened it to that 3.25 lengths. And with the 103 buyer, it was, you know, validated by the numbers as well. So Maxfield, impressive yesterday in the Stephen Foster. I was pretty happy with the not only the day's finale, but the meet finale as well. It was the Teppan. And if you watched Racing Across America yesterday, I had Joe Christofek on from Churchill Downs. And, you know, we did a little meet recap, and then we talked about some of the races, the Stephen Foster and the Fleur de Lis. Now that I'm thinking about it, Christofek, and I did too. The other two were not so impressive, maybe. But I guess we were 3-3. I think we both like Maxfield and Latruska. But the Teppan, when I was on the phone with Joe during the commercial break, he said, yeah, I like a horse in the last race. And so why don't we hit on that as well? And so as we wrapped up the interview, I said, hey, let's take a look at the Teppan, because I know you like a horse in this race. And I said, I'm going to be interested to know if you like the same clever horse that I do, because I like Navratilova. At 12-1 on the morning, I said, oh, you stole my thunder. And so we both talked a little bit about Navratilova at 12-1 on the morning line. And because we both liked the horse, we wondered, are we going to get that 12-1? Well, here we go. We're a stretch run of the Teppan yesterday. Number 5, Navratilova does get it done. Didn't get our 12-1, but 9-1 was still pretty good. Navratilova's number 5. Number 8 is Toby's Heart. This is the horse that had shown some promise last year, including a second start of the career, won the Bolton Landing up at Saratoga. So you see a nice late stretch run from Toby's Heart to get second there. And number 10, New Boss, runs third. But again, $20.80 if you were watching the show yesterday. I hope you picked up on Christofek and I were both kind of pointing to that one. And so game, set, match. You see what I did there for Navratilova in the Teppan. As I say, a nice little $20 mutual there. And again, Joe texted me afterwards and said, hey, did you bet it? And I said, I had a little bit. I should have had a little better. But I said, the price held up. I mean, we didn't get the 12-1, obviously, but $20. I'm still pretty happy with that to wrap up the Churchill meet. I said Maxfield got the 103. Navratilova got a decent little 84 there. Three-year-old fillies on the grass. She now becomes kind of an interesting player. She had prior, you know, as we talked about it yesterday, I liked the whole angle. She was kind of coming in with a couple of starts under the belt. Nice improvement, start 1 to start 2 this season. But both of those were turf sprints. She was stretching out in the third start back. I just liked the whole scenario. And so, again, got the nice price there yesterday. In the Teppan, let's go back and watch some of the other stakes action from yesterday, and we'll go back to the Wise Dan a little earlier on the card. Another horse I liked, and another really, really nice performance we're going to watch here. Check when we pull up the replay, look for the one chicklet, because set piece, and Travis Stone said, has to weave his way through the field. And you see set piece there in the Judmont colors, and Florent Giroux, his weaving his way. And when there is an opening, man, this is a nice run. Set piece gets it done. Beats Some Like It Hot Brown, who the really nice New York bred, gives it his all. Just can't hold off set piece. Ride a Comet runs third, field pass fourth. So for me, it was 1, 2, 3, 4 with the way I selected them. And again, just sitting back and watching the race style, field pass looked spectacular. Set piece looked spectacular in there for Brad Cox. This was the race where Brad was in the winner's circle and talked a little bit about his horse in the Stephen Foster, because they talked to him after this race and said this was a pretty good field. It's a grade two, but it had had grade one quality perhaps to it. So what are your plans now? And Brad said, yeah, maybe we'll look for something. And I'm wondering, Four Star Dave up at Saratoga, maybe? But set piece, a 100 buyer. And again, that was a really nice-looking performance. Take nothing away from Some Like It Hot Brown. As I say, the nice New York bred was coming off a stakes win on the grass down at Pimlico prior and just could not hold off a really spectacular performance from set piece. But it was, and like I said before the race, I could have gone either way with this. And as I was talking, Some Like It Hot Brown was actually taking the action on the tote board. By the time they got into the gate and went off, set piece was favored at 8-5, and Some Like It Hot Brown was 2-1. So they were close. I said I could have flip-flopped them either way. I just thought the win in the prior stake for set piece was a little bit, tilted me a little more in his direction, and he validated that. Wow, that was just really a spectacular performance from set piece. And again, I we'll see. It wouldn't shock me if there's one we do see up at Saratoga. All right, we also had some two-year-olds on the card. As far as two-year-olds, excuse me, Saratoga, given that this is a Pletcher horse, probably will. But I will say in the Bashford Manor, there were the boys in the Bashford Manor, there were the girls in the debutante. And I said before the races, on our stakes preview with Mike Callahan, I said, I think the horses in the debutante are stronger than the horses in the Bashford Manor. I think that was kind of borne out, and you'll see it buyer figure-wise here. So again, I'm not quite sure what the talent level is coming out of the Bashford Manor, but I had Double Thunder, the eventual winner, in the second slot. I had Red Run on top. That one went off as the 5-2 favorite, Red Run, for Steve Asmussen. It was a little bit of a disappointing fifth, but right underneath, I thought Double Thunder coming out of the maiden debut victory at Monmouth back on June 5th, was a player as well. And Double Thunder looked good. I mean, this is an impressive performance visually. Double Thunder's the number 8 horse here. John Velasco is on board. He had another good day. So it looked good, but it comes back, you know, the final time for the 6 furlongs, 111 and change. The buyer was a 64, so Vodka and Water runs second. Glacial runs third. But again, with the 64 buyer and the 111 time frame, I'm not, you know, totally convinced that Double Thunder is going to be a two-year-old we're going to be latching onto as the summer progresses. But certainly, strike while the iron is hot. And if you have a horse that's a little bit precocious and you can get it done with a 64 buyer figure and walk away with the better part of $150,000 purse, more power to you. And so Double Thunder gets it done in the Bashford Manor. As I say, John Velasquez got it done there. Should have noted the jockeys. I did mention Florent Giroux on the Wise Dan winner set piece. Navratilova was Brian Hernandez, and Maxfield was Jose Ortiz. So I wanted to mention a couple of New York-based jockeys getting it done in some of the stakes action, some of what we've looked at so far. And we'll toss some of those names out further as we look at some of the stakes action. And we'll go back to the debutante. Again, on the girls' side, as I say, I thought going in, I thought they were stronger than the boys. Coming out, clearly, and looking at the number and whatnot, debutante yesterday. Again, $150,000 for the two-year-old girls, going 6 furlongs. The boys in 111, the girls in 109 and change. And I think, you know, and again, this may be one we'll see up at Saratoga as well, because I thought this was a pretty good performance. Behave Virginia, now 2-for-2 in the career, won the debut victory on May 28th by 5 lengths and wins yesterday. Only a length, number 7, Behave Virginia. On the 1s and 2s for Norm Cassie, decent little second, the number 8 horse and Wicked Halo runs 3rd. On the 1s and 2s, the 8 was the 7-to-5 favorite. The winner was a 4-to-1 third choice. Chart margins of length, buyer's decent, an 83. You know, a two-year-old this time of year, that's a pretty good buyer. And as I say, as compared to the 64 buyer in the 111 time for the boys, the girls looked stronger going in, and given what we see on paper coming out, I think they proved stronger as well. And as I say, I'm not sure up at Saratoga how the Bashford Manor two-year-olds will play, although the winner is a Pletcher horse, so I won't be shocked if we do see him give a shot up there. But I think on the girls' side, we can maybe take a look for some of these to show up at Saratoga. You know, it's Ken McPeak, and riding was Brian Hernandez. And as I say, 4-to-1, you got a nice little $10 and change price there in the Bashford Manor from Behave Virginia. And again, I would expect we can look for Behave Virginia up at Saratoga potentially. We'll move now to the War Chant, which unfortunately got scratched a little bit. I took a little pop with Helium, and he runs 3rd in here. Royal Prince is going to run 2nd. Next is going to run 3rd. But I said we're going to mention some of the New York jockeys again. John Velasquez, oof, he lulled him to sleep. Next, the 8 horse winds up to be the winner. But in the short 4-horse field, just kind of opened up a little daylight. Little daylight was a length and a half ahead, pretty much. 24 and change, 48 and change, 112 and change. You know, those kind of fractions, it's going to be tough to pull them in. The short field, you know, sometimes those kind of things happen. But he lulled them to sleep. Helium, a little bit disappointing, running 3rd in there, and a well-beaten 3rd. Royal Prince runs 2nd for Brad Cox. But it is Wesley Ward and John Velasquez getting it done in the War Chant. That subdivision I like quite a bit, the three-year-olds on the grass. And next, gets a 90 buyer, so it is a lifetime best buyer number. This was only the 2nd start as a 3-year-old. Showed some flashes as a 2-year-old, and now with that win and only the 2nd start, maybe there's still a little upside because, again, it was a lifetime best buyer yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, this is a fun subdivision for me because pretty much every track in the country has one of these 3-year-old turf stakes races, and they go all year long, and they can sort themselves out. I don't think so far this year we've had anybody really kind of take a stranglehold on that division of 3-year-olds on the turf. But next, you know, maybe has the potential to be a player. I wouldn't have said that going into yesterday, but now comes out. And again, having shown a little bit of potential last year as a 2-year-old and putting that one on the resume and only the 2nd start this season, maybe he'll be okay. I will get a little, you know, the 4-horse field and being able to play out the pace the way John Velasquez was able to. I'm not totally convinced, but let's see one more from next, and we'll decide then. But there's the potential there to be interesting in that division. All right, and we'll go back to the Fleur-de-Lis, which kicked off the stakes action yesterday. Another nice performance. Another one I wouldn't be shocked to see up at Saratoga. She could probably sit off the rest of the year, though, and have kind of a stranglehold on her division, but certainly Latruska is now at the head of the Philly and Mayer division. She kind of put herself firmly in the conversation with the win over Monomoy Girl and may, in a lot of people's minds, been at the top at that point, but certainly moved squarely to the top of the division with the win on June 5th in the Phipps, and then she came back yesterday in the Fleur-de-Lis and looked spectacular again. You know, a fairly quick turnaround in the 21st century of only 21 days, 3 weeks she comes back. But boy, look at her here. This is just, chart margin winds up to be 5 3/4. Antoinette 2nd. En Voutant, the number 4 horse, who was the clear 2nd choice in here, can't get by Antoinette. And that was a little bit disappointing if you're an En Voutant fan. Now, the fractions were a little bit slow. That maybe played into, you know, not much of a change in the stretch. Again, it was another race where the pace played out to the benefit of the front runner, who was Letruska, 24 and change, 48 and change, 111 and change. A horse of this class and quality, those are well within her scope, leading to that stretch run where she just kind of ran away and hid from them at 3-5 and a 102 buyer. So again, as she moved into the top of the division over the last three races, she's put three triple digits together in the Apple Blossom, a 102, in the Phipps, a 103, and again yesterday in the Florida Lee, a 102. So she's just spectacular. I hope we get a chance to see a personal ensign up at Saratoga perhaps, or, you know, but it's hard to know horses like this, particularly that she strung a couple pretty close together, what exactly they'll want to do. I mean, I could also see them kind of saying, eh, let's take a little break for a couple of months and come back and get in one in the fall before we head to the Breeders' Cup. You know, sometimes you can kind of look in the crystal ball and say, yeah, Saratoga race may be in the headlights here, but there's others like this where I don't know what they'll choose, particularly given the scenario of, as I say, the quick turnaround from the Phipps to that race yesterday. And yesterday was a win and you're in, and there was a lot of comment on the simulcast signal, oh, win and you're in. Letruska got in the Breeders' Cup. But she'd already been in. With the Phipps was a win and you're in too. So I said to Dan, our control room guy, I said, maybe she's getting, maybe they can hold them over to next year. Maybe she's got a win and you're in for next year too. But she's firmly in now with two win and you're ins under her belt. All right, let's go over to Belmont, because a couple of nice stakes on the card yesterday as well. And again, I'm not quite sure how this is going to play into Saratoga. The Mother Goose, I mean, typically we see some nice three-year-old fillies come out of this and they'll pop up to Saratoga. I'm not sure what to make of the winner here. The Mother Goose Grade 2 event, $250,000, mile and a 16th. And I think everybody and their cousin was either looking at Always Carina or Clairiere. I've liked Clairiere right along. I thought she was a little more battle-tested. The three horse, I went in that direction. She was the second choice at 9-5. The 4-5 favorite was Always Carina, the number two, undefeated in two impressive starts for Chad Brown. So it looked like it was between the two, Always Carina, or the three, Clairiere. But Zagiel gets it done for Pletcher and Shadwell as the longest price in the five-horse field at 18-1. She winds up with a really solid 99 buyer, which not only was a lifetime best, it was a lifetime best by 30-some points. I mean, it's just that's why I say I'm not sure how this is playing into the three-year-old filly division or Saratoga. Now, I'm not going to be shocked if she shows up there and, you know, there's Coaching Club American Oaks or, you know, Alabama in the offing, particularly given the 99. But, boy, it's just hard to make a case off of what was on the page before. But she just blasted off. Last time out, she tried the turf, a little turf experiment that failed in a stake down at Churchill. So there was a turf-to-dirt move. And, you know, it was just hard to envision that performance given what was on the page already. But given that performance, again, we'll see what's coming up for her. Always Carina and Clairiere, again, a little bit disappointing maybe, but you know, we'll look for those two to kind of rebound. And Clairiere clearly is, you know, the connections know they have a nice horse and they have a grade two from earlier this year. I'm sure they're going to shop for a grade one for this one. And continues Steve Ashman in Stone Street. So won't be surprised to see her up at Saratoga trying something the other or shipping around to other spots as well. And Always Carina, you know, this was only the third career start. Jump up into the grade two Mother Goose. And so, you know, we'll look for her as well to come back and maybe rebound and benefit from some stakes experience. Again, they were a little bit disappointing, but they're both talented enough that, you know, we'll look for bounce backs there. But the winner, wow, that was crazy, crazy good. And then in the Wild Applause, $100,000 for the three-year-old fillies on the turf, Minon. Yesterday I heard three or four different pronunciations of the Chad Brown runner. But that one wound up as the 6-5 favorite and winds up second to Runaway Rumor, who went off at 13-1. And Runaway Rumor, a New York bred, first couple starts of the career, two starts, two wins, state bred main specials, state bred allowance, and gets it done yesterday under Louis Cardenas at 13-1. Nice looking performance. This was only the third career start, the third win. They have a nice little three-year-old filly on the turf, and it's a three-year-old New York bred. So there are all kinds of options for Runaway Rumor. Certainly, Minuin, the Chad Brown runner that went off at 6-5, runs second. That horse was fairly lately raced too. A couple of starts in Europe, a couple of starts here in the United States. Now a win in allowance company in the second yesterday. So won't be shocked to see either of these up at Saratoga as well. Navisian Sunrise ran third in there. But as I say, nice performance from the winner. And I always look at these kind, and I'm envious when I look at these kind, because I think, man, if you're an owner and you have one of these talented New York breds who jumps into open company and shows up, it gives you all kinds of options with the New York bred stakes days there are here that offer up nice money, and you have a horse that's already done well in open company. The sky is the limit, as they say. So we'll see where she winds up next, Runaway Rumor. But it was a nice performance, certainly yesterday, in the Wild Applause. All right, and finally, I did want to look at the Ohio Derby. We talked about it, stakes preview. We talked about it yesterday with Ellis Starr. Stakes preview, I had Mike Callahan yesterday. Ellis Starr on Racing Across America. They both like Masca Parade. So they're going to get it done. I like King Fury. I should have gotten it done. King Fury, it was just a rough trip, and you don't see King Fury is the number four, and you can see him coming here, and he just kind of gets the momentum, then doesn't get the momentum, then gets the momentum, and at the end you think, oh, I think maybe we're going to win, and he comes up short, but you don't see the worst part of the trip here. It's like, oh, man, and he does get the bob. I didn't think he got the bob for second, but he did get the bob for second. But the worst part of the trip was on the backstretch as they are kind of coming into the turn. Corey Lannery, it's hard to blame a jockey for trying to save ground, but he was on the rail. And in front of him was Hoosier, who was kind of up chasing the leaders early and then faded. And so Corey Lannery is then stuck behind a horse who's fading. And so Corey has to fade. Very good. And you'll kind of see it here. Hoosier is the number three horse, and King Fury is the number four. And you can see up on the top of the screen there, as Hoosier starts to fade, Corey has to fade back as well and goes almost to the back of the pack before he can eventually get clear and kind of pass. And so at that point, he just has, you know, a lot of work to do. And you can see him coming into the screen now once he gets clear. And then, as they say, in the stretch, he also just kind of got the momentum and didn't get, and he's kind of squeezed here, and Corey's trying to find a hole. But I think what cost him was that being caught behind the fading horse and really having to kind of fade back and then float out, given that he just, you know, he really gives a nice run here in the stretch and just comes up a half a length short. I think I had the best horse. That said, I will tip my cap to both Mike Callahan and Ellis Starr. They had Masca Parade. Masca Parade does get it done for Al Stahl, Miguel Mena on board. King Fury, though, nice second for Ken McPeak. And coming off of that Lexington win, he had a lot of confidence. They were thinking Kentucky Derby potentially or Preakness, given what the point situation was going to be. And then they had a little ding. They went to the sidelines, a little fever. And so King Fury comes back. And again, I think he'll be interesting to watch on the three-year-old scene going forward. Masca Parade, though, both Ellis and Mike like that optional claiming win down at Churchill. That seemed to be a little bit of a breakthrough event for him back on May 1st, and I think he validated that. So he'll be interesting, too. We're getting into that now, late spring, summertime period, where some of the three-year-olds that maybe are later starters are going to have the opportunity to kind of prove themselves over the next, you know, couple of months and maybe some of the bigger events if they choose to go there. So, again, really nice day of stakes action yesterday. Churchill, Belmont, Thistledown, and beyond. the ones we took a look at, as they say. I would think some of those will have implications up the North Way in just a few weeks. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do a little handicapping, and then a few minutes after that, Jenny Reese will join us, and we'll get a little preview of the Ellis Park meet, which kicks off today. Yesterday's Churchill card was the wrap-up to their season, and today the opener of the nice Ellis summer meet. So as I say, we'll get a preview coming up in a few, but first, some handicapping. I think I'll take a look at a little Belmont when we come back. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America, and I was just trying to pull it up to validate. Tyler Gaffleone won the meet title, and I believe it was Brad Cox on the trainer side. I know it was Gaffleone. Gaffleone had a lead that was kind of insurmountable. The trainer title got a little bit... Brad Cox and Tyler Gaffleone. So they wound up to be the leaders of the Churchill meet. And as I said, Gaffleone kind of ran away with it. The last day on the trainer side was a little more questionable. But Gaffleone, another nice Churchill meet. So congratulations to them. All right, let's take a look at Belmont. And I'll take a look at the early pick four. Again, we'll be in later this afternoon with OTB Live, taking a live look at Belmont. A little Gulfstream as well and more, but the second race today at Belmont kicks off the early pick four, and we'll go through the pick four again. Not putting a ticket together, don't have scratches or anything, but just give you an idea if you want to jump in and maybe take a look at that sequence. Second at Belmont, B Condition Claimers going six. I have a 2-6, the one entry in four. Charlie 5-0 comes off a big win last time, off a layoff from February until May, was claimed out of that race. Claimed for 16, however, and bounces up to 35. Moves out of the Danny Garrigan barn into the Linda Rice barn. So the claim and the move up is a little bit of a concern. But to me, it's more of, I like the confidence. I like the fact that, A, the win was very good. B, the level was the lowest on the resume. And C, the bump up kind of splits the difference between that level last time and where the horse had been racing. So there are things to kind of think, is this going to be a little tougher? And there are things to also like, I think this horse will fit with this group, and I'm tilting in that direction. So Charlie 5-0 on top. Ragtime Blues, flip side of the class coin. This one is getting a class drop that I think is substantial enough to look for a potential rebound. The race last time on the turf was not good, but I think this horse, you look at the career, clearly more dirt meant. And there are back numbers that are very good. And sometimes that class relief leads to a mental, I remember how good I was, when they get in against a little bit lesser. So I think we could rebound to some of those better numbers. And then the one entry is playable as well. Color Me Pazzi and Tapazirans. Between the two, well, Color Me, I was going to say I prefer Tapazirans because there are back numbers there, but Color Me Pazzi has the better recent numbers, steps out of a state bred allowance, and that's a move I normally like, but I've said it before, I kind of like it when state bred allowance, you know, you have a little string of those, and then you move into a claimer. This one bounced up into the state bred allowance last time after a string of claiming races, so I'm not sure the class move is as important as just the numbers recently that are pretty good compared to this bunch. Back numbers for the other half of the entry are good. So the second at Belmont, 2-6, the one entry and four. Belmont's third race this afternoon, maiden specials going a mile and a quarter on the grass. Average 4.65 and 3. Canby Lion, it's a shug runner, hasn't been seen since April 21st. Nice string of improving numbers in the first three starts of the career and improving finishing positions. Jose Ortiz has been on board for all three starts. I'm back on board again today. And it's just one of those where you look at what this horse has done and look at this particular field today. I think the horse has the potential to break through. High Def in the second spot. Started the career down at Gulfstream last year, had a start back in January down there as well, and then came back in May at Churchill. It's a Chad Brown, Peter Brandt runner, and last time, decent little second down at Churchill. That was against maiden claimers, high-priced maiden claimers, though, so a little bit tougher, but I think overall, this horse, again, when you look at this group, I think it's going to be a good fit. And Galawi. Again, one of those where, and I'm sure I probably am not close. But started the career in Europe, Grand Motion trainee now here in the United States. Won't be shocked if we see a nice performance for this one in the United States debut. Long layoff, though, has to be overcome, but adds Lasix today for the U.S. debut. And as I say, won't be shocked if this horse runs well. In the third at Belmont, 4.65 and 3. Race number four at Belmont, state bred claimers. I have it 4, 6, 5, and 3. It's the same numbers. Two races in a row. I'm not sure what that means. Hopefully it means good luck, but two races in a row. The exact same four in order. 4, 6, 5, and 3, ninth hour on top. Comes in off a couple of wins for Chris Englehart. State bred allowance, two back up at the Finger Lakes, then came down to Belmont. Tried 20 claimers, now goes into a 25 claimer, state bred 25 claimer. So I think a good fit, good form. Second slot, we will go out to number six, Money in the Bank. Another one in good form for Chris Englehart. So becomes kind of the other Chris Englehart in here. Two wins in the last couple of starts. State bred allowance up at Finger Lakes last time. So kind of similar scenario to the top pick. My Roxy Girl in the third spot also in current good form, having won a 20,000 open claimer last time for Charlie Baker. So these three are pretty evenly matched. If you're playing the picks, you probably are looking to juggle those up and look at all of them. But for me, I have it in the fourth, 4, 6, 5, and 3. And if I turn the page and I have 4, 6, 5, and 3, get it? No, okay, we don't. 6, 4, 2, and 7 in the fifth, optional claimer. And people are saying, how do you not know what you have written in the next? I'm like 3 days ahead usually. A lot of times people walk up to me and I always think, oh, this guy doesn't, because somebody will say to me, what do you like today? And I don't have any PPs in front of me and I have to explain. I've handicapped 3 days ahead now. Unless I can go back and look at the past performances, I don't remember. It's all numbers at that point. But with the PPs in front of me in the fifth race today, 6, 4, 2, and 7, Miss Tehran on top for Chad Brown. Comes off a nice second-place finish last time in a very similar event. So in good form at this level makes perfect sense. Second slot, Beautiful Lover, up from Tampa back in March in the seasonal debut. So the second start back for Christophe Clement. But the Tampa race was a stakes and, in fact, is coming out of a steady string of stakes races. Joe Rosario on board. So this horse, pretty close talent-wise, I would think, to the top pick. And then Bacchanalia in the third spot. Another Chad Brown runner, Chad and Klarovic, showed some speed last time to take him most of the way around before getting caught, running a very close-up third, close-up to the top pick as well. So really, all three of these are kind of evenly matched. In the fifth at Belmont, 6, 4, 2, and 7. All right, that gives you some ideas for Belmont, the early pick four, if you want to play that. And again, we'll be back in a couple hours to take a live look, so you can tune in there as well for more thoughts and commentary as the odds become apparent as well. But now we'll take a break. When we come back, Jenny Reese from the Kentucky HBPA. She'll talk a little bit about opening day at Ellis and the season ahead. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
It's a photo finish. It's too close to home. Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Oops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As noted before the break, joined now by our friend Jenny Reese, handles media relations for the Kentucky HBPA, and we check in with her for all things Kentucky, and that includes opening day and the season ahead at Ellis Park. Jenny, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. It sounds like you've got the same weather we got here. It's Ellis Park weather, hot and humid.
Yeah, Triple H's, hot, humid, and hazy. We're getting it up here over the next few days. And I will tell my viewers, you said when we were in the break, I didn't even know. You said you're in Santa Claus, Indiana, as we speak. So ho, 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 I guess.
Yeah, right. I'm a little less than an hour from Ellis, and I pulled off here for this because you can get, it's a lot of middle of cornfields you're going through on the way to. It's all interstate, but it's cornfields, and you can get some dropped calls. So I pulled off in Santa Claus, Indiana, in this balmy weather.
We appreciate it and appreciate the conversation as well. Top of the show, I always do a stakes recap, and so we recapped all the great stakes yesterday at Churchill, and I said the Churchill meet is going to play into Saratoga for folks in our area, certainly, and I think that includes last night. But that was closing night, and that means opening day today at Ellis Park. And I pulled up some photos, and Dan in the control room can run through them as we go through. Of Ellis and the little picnic area and the shot looking across at the turf course and the infield. For folks who have never been, just talk a little bit about Ellis in general and what the experience is like.
I never really appreciated this. I used to just come in occasionally cover a stake, so I worked for the newspaper in Louisville. But working, this will be my sixth meet, also working at Ellis Park doing publicity. It's such a generational family thing. Or, the track, 99 years old, all of which 2 years were horse racing. It ran 1 year. Actually, its first meet was as a harness track. And then a few days later, they ran a 10-day thoroughbred meet. That was in 1922. And then probably went bankrupt. So the next 2 years, the only racing was Labor Day weekend. They had auto racing. And then James C. Ellis bought it out of bankruptcy, and it's had thoroughbred racing ever since. But it's such a family. I've never seen so many little kids at a racetrack. Canterbury might come close, but Ellis Park, they come with their parents, they come with their grandparents, and you just hear that story over and over, people that you know, they're adults now that said, you know, I came with my, you know, my granddad when I was little. And it's very cool like that. There's a lot of grass there. It's in the middle of, like well, the floodplain. Here's another little bit of trivia. It's on the one sliver of Kentucky that is north of the Ohio River from the New Madrid Fault earthquake in 1812, I think it was. It changed the course of the river. And Ellis Park has an Evansville, Indiana phone number, but a Kentucky address. So that's a little bit wild. But it's also, it is the largest dirt track in Kentucky at 1.8 miles. And to my knowledge, it is the only track in America and maybe the world that has a cash crop in the infield. It's got 25 acres of soybeans that they lease to a farmer that, you know, raises them and harvests them. And so it is definitely unique, and we're so excited at all these tracks in Kentucky, able to have people back. And so that's very, very cool. I tell you what, there's going to be more Churchill people at a stable at Ellis than there have been in many decades, because Churchill Downs is closing down July 5th for 2 months to put in a new turf course. And so you're going to have, for the first time, Dwayne Lucas stabled at Ellis Park. Bill Mott, his Kentucky String will be stabled there. The Foleys, Vicky and Greg, you know, they haven't been there probably in 30 years. They're going to be back stabling there. So all the stalls are filled. Now, the one thing about it is, you know, Ellis doesn't have the stall space, say, that Churchill or certainly Keeneland has. So one impact of the shutdown of Churchill Downs for the summer for off-season stabling is a lot of, there's a handful of trainers representing a significant number of horses that are going to Colonial. So that'll impact Ellis. So you're going to have some horses that you wouldn't have had, and then you're probably losing access to some horses. Turfway will be open. I think some guys like Brad Cox, and I'm assuming Assassin, though I don't know that for sure, are probably going to have a lot of overflow at Turfway. The thing with Turfway is, though, it's actually only about an hour from Indiana Grand, and it's like 3.5 hours to Ellis, so that makes it a little tougher ship. So it's going to be a real interesting meet. You were mentioning the races at Churchill yesterday, those stakes. And there are a couple of horses that I'd been told they might be looking at Ellis Park, but they ran so well, I assume they're coming your way to Saratoga, like the winner of the debutante, Kenny McPeak's Philly Behave Virginia. He had talked about the Ellis Park debutante, and now he's talking about just waiting until he can run her two turns back at Churchill in the fall. Also, I'm thinking King Fury, didn't he end up third, a close third in the Ohio Derby? I was hoping we might get him for the Ellis Park Derby. It might still, but I wouldn't be surprised if he came, you know, for one of the big three-year-old races at Saratoga.
Yeah, I actually, we showed that replay, and I had King Fury on top, and I thought he should have won. He kind of had a trip that, you know, he had to fade back a little bit going into the turn, and I thought he should have won that one. So I'll be interested to see where they do go next. And it just, we had shown a shot as you were talking about the soybeans, and you could see them. It's a shot looking across the track to the infield, and you can see the soybeans there. And I'm guessing that is the origin of the nickname, the pea patch.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's been different regimes that not all of them have embraced it, but the current regime embraces it. We have an overnight stakes, in fact, called the pea patch. So that's where it gets that name, and it's not a derogatory term. It's just a fact of life. We got soybeans in the infield, which I think is really cool, and it makes for a very pretty infield. Now, one year, they grew some corn there, and it grew way too fast. They didn't expect it to grow so fast. And you couldn't see the backstretch, and the horsemen on the backstretch couldn't see their horses work in the morning. So just a lot of interesting different sort of trivia about Ellis Park, over the years. And it's amazing to think that it's the second oldest track in Kentucky behind only Churchill Downs. It's older than, Keeneland. So a lot of history there. Of course, Cowboy Jones, who, gosh, did he ride part of six different decades, maybe seven different decades. He doesn't ride anymore. He used to be the, you know, sort of the house jock in the jocks room, but he's at the races holding court every day and just a real character. But you know who we do have that is riding at a very high level at age 60 is John Court. He's amazing. He's amazing how many different decades he's won stakes in. So we just hope I keep telling him now, you got to stay off your adult toys because that's how he gets hurt, you know, like jet skiing or this or that. But so far, you know, he's in one piece coming into this meet, and we need him to stay that way. But speaking of John, the jockey colony is sensational. Not only do we have all the guys we had last year, which is basically we have everybody at Churchill Downs except Santana and Gafalium, but everybody else will be at Ellis. Giroux was maybe going to go to Saratoga, and he decided to, you know, for the third year be at at Ellis. It just gives them a lot of flexibility. You can be gone on weekends for stakes and really not pay a price. Like if you go to Saratoga and then you want to go to Arlington's Big Day or Monmouth or something, there might be somebody that wanted you. And it's so tough to crack the top end of your all riding colony there. But in addition this year to the Kentucky guys, you've got the best of Indiana Grand coming down. You know, Marcelino Pedroza, Deshaun Parker, Dela Cruz, because Indiana Grand races Monday through Thursday and Ellis races Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, like Marcelino, he's going to ride 7 days a week. And people go, are you crazy? He said, I'm only 28. I was off most of last year, injured. So he said, I got to make up for lost time. But then in addition to that, if that doesn't make it deep enough, you've got David Cabrera coming in to ride for the first time. And, of course, Drayden Van Dyke has moved his tack to Kentucky from California. He'll be riding at Ellis for the first time. Francisco Arrieta, yeah. Also comes from the Southwest. He won a ton of races at Oakland. So very, very deep riding colleague. I dare to say, depth-wise, I'm not saying that the top is the best, but I think depth-wise, it's as deep as anywhere you're going to find the jockey colony at Ellis Park.
Yeah, Florent Giroux, I was reading just what you said, that they were thinking Saratoga, but they thought, you know, our opportunities may be better overall down at Ellis, so he adds to the colony. Nice colony there. And on the trainer side, you listed already some of them, but reading some of the stuff that you put out and has been put out by Ellis over the past few days, I was kind of surprised to read, and given the situation at Churchill, it's not surprising in that he has a string there now. But Chad Brown's going to have some horses at Ellis.
How about that? He just got in late with the stuff. I mean, he was on the waiting list, and you know, it's tough. They only have 750 stalls, and they have their people that have been there forever they got to take care of. But you had so many people that, race most of the year in Kentucky and have for a long time and really support the program. But how about that? Chad Brown at Ellis Park. Now, Chad Brown himself won't be at Ellis Park, but we're thrilled to have Whit Beckham, his assistant, who's actually from Louisville, and he really was wanting to stay. And the thing that I'm excited about that, too, is the PR person for Kentucky Downs. Chad, he discovered Kentucky Downs last year. He'd only raced one horse until, you know, before last year and hadn't run any good in a stakes. Last year he came because he had a place to ship from. He was at Churchill Downs. And he won his first start last meet at Kentucky Downs, and he won two stakes. Had a really good, you know, meet. And now he plans for it. And I thought if they hadn't gotten stalls at Ellis, those horses were going up to New York. And I don't know if Chad would have been back or not. So I'm really happy on a lot of fronts that, I used to joke, I think I've joked with you, that we should have had our motto before last year at Kentucky Downs. And I say this with all respect. This isn't knocking anybody, but we could have had the motto, Kentucky Downs, where the money is and Chad Brown isn't. Just sort of a testament to how tough he is to beat in turf races. Well, I got to come up with another motto now, but we're just really, really thrilled to have Chad Brown. You know, so there's four Hall of Famers with Mark Cassie that have strings and Steve Ashmussen at Ellis Park. And then, you know, Chad Brown's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Brad Cox, you got to think, is going to be a future Hall of Famer. So, yeah, very deep. We're averaging, LSU's going to average about, it's scheduled to average $350,000 a day in purses. That's a track record. Maidens, if you're Kentucky bred, which is obviously most of the horses in Kentucky, go for $51,000. So I think, you know, the entries, I think, held up pretty well, considering that Churchill, you know, was running and a lot of people were running for that big money. And let's face it, looking around, entries are light everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real trend in the industry. So I think Ellis, looking at that first few days of racing, it's actually, they've held up admirably. And I think as we get a little, you know, some of these Churchill horses cycle back, some of the main races we'll see, and some of the two-year-olds that haven't been ready to run that'll be ready to run. You know, very excited to see what comes out of Ellis Park's two-year-old races this summer.
I was thinking exactly the same thing we were about the entries. I think you had trainers trying to get in at Churchill at the end there and whatnot. This will moderate out over the next couple of weeks, and your entry box will be fine. But before we move on from trainers, I just want to I don't know whether we missed the wedding and now we're headed to the funeral, but I wanted to tout you tossing out a trainer's name. And I had Ellis Starr on yesterday, and he pointed people to the press release that you had talking about Juan Cano. And yesterday, he was talking about his horse in the Wise Dan, but earlier on the card, he wins with a 31-1 shot. So hopefully people picked up on your press release there.
I went to the funeral there. I didn't go to the wedding. I was with you. His horse in the Wise Dan. I was at the track, and I was, they were going to the coming onto the track. So I called my husband, who was at home betting on his online account. I said, bet me two across on this horse just in case, you know. But Juan, who took over for Angel Montano, his mentor, who died last October 1st on his 80th birthday, he had a phenomenal meet. He ended up, I want to say, with 5 wins. And, you know, out of a small, pretty small, like he had 12, 13 horses. And so good for him. It's really neat because Angel's family, his kids, who kind of kept Angel the last, you know, 10 or so years of his career, his kids really kept him with horses. They and their friends in Montana is a very well-known family in Louisville. They were all great athletes and all great students, and they're all, you know, pillars in the community. And they're supporting Juan the same way. And it's like Angel, when he took Juan under his wing, it's like he was paying forward for the success he had, and he was able to achieve the American dream coming in from Mexico when he was 17. And, you know, he was he wanted Juan to take over the stable, and Angel's kids, they took a family vote, and everybody wanted all the tack and equipment and the golf cart even to go to Juan, which that could have cost him $30,000-$40,000 if he had to buy that stuff out of pocket.
That's great. And again, hats off to you for kind of touting that to people. Hopefully people picked up on that with Lamartine yesterday at 31-1, but keep your eyes on him at Ellis as well. You alluded to it a couple of minutes ago, but I want to reiterate, overall, and we've talked to you over the past few seasons, it seems like the last 4 or 5 years, the summer at Ellis has just become more prominent and more prominent, as evidenced by these names that are showing up on the trainer side of things. But one of the nice things summertime at Ellis, and Dale Romans has been a guy who's done this, the two-year-old program down at Ellis is just spectacular.
Sure. Dale and Kenny McPeak, before it was fashionable, they were the ones, they probably did too good a job promoting it because other people caught on. But they, you know, I was looking up the grade one winners that Kenny's had that started out at two, and Dale too. You know, Brody's Cause was one. Gosh, I don't think who else. But Dale's had several grade one winners come out of the two-year-old program, and Kenny's had, it was at least 4 or 5. There was something on the tip of my tongue talking about the two. Oh, Midnight Bourbon. That's what I wanted to say. Midnight Bourbon, the Preakness runner-up. He started out at Ellis Park with Steve Atkinson's division. So you just don't, you know, these guys, they have to keep some of their horses separated, and a lot of them do go to Saratoga, but boy, they sure keep, especially the ones that they want to run, think really want to run a little longer. This is where Kenny really supports the program. You'll see them, he'll run them in those mile maiden turf races. And it's not so much that he thinks they're turf horses. He just thinks they're distance horses, and he wants to get that mile in them. And if it comes off the turf, you know, that's well and good, too, because they keep it at a mile. But that's a two-turn turf race at Ellis. And so, yeah, like I said, now little sorry that it's one filly, one the debutante, because now she's going to Saratoga.
Yeah.
She is going to Saratoga. She's probably not going to race, though, Kenny was saying, but he might take her up there just to, that's right, she was going to wait for a mile 16th of.
Yeah, it was a pretty good number, too. So, yeah, that was a nice performance. And the girls were better than the boys. The Bashford Manor, the Pletcher winner, was a nice, it looked nice, but the number came back a little light. But being Pletcher, I think that one's probably headed up to Saratoga as well. Jenny, before we let you go, I'm going to be curious to watch today and look at the apron and whatnot and get the crowd because, you know, we're less than 3 weeks away up here from opening day with 100% capacity and from the response I've been getting walking around town, opening day at Saratoga, I think is going to be just insane. And I'm curious, as you've been around Ellis the past couple of weeks, the locals are, you know, with fans back on track and whatnot, are they looking to break down the doors at Ellis as well?
I think so. I just see that, you know, you see that in the restaurants, you see that at the, you know, the soccer team and the baseball team in Louisville, people are just wanting to get out and do things. So I think Ellis is going to be part of that, too. And like I said, it's cheap family entertainment. It's free general admission. And there's a lot of grassy area that kids can run around and play. A couple of years ago, I had a Twitter campaign. I called it Cute Kids at Ellis Park. There was a hashtag. And I just take getting permission from the adult they were with. But I would just take pictures and put them on Twitter of cute kids at Ellis Park, and there's so many of them. I mean, it's like I said, the only thing that comes close to me is Canterbury. Keeneland has a lot of teenagers and college age kids, but Ellis has the young kids and the all ages, and I just think it's going to be a great meet that people are really, you know, they've got that pent up demand. And one thing I tell you what it's really helping the community is hotels, and I'm sure the same could be true with restaurants, but these trainers all needing a place to stay and their help.
Yeah.
So the hotels are doing real well in Evansville and Henderson.
Nice. And you talk about the kids developing new fans. That's what it's all about. These summertime tracks, I think, are so important. You know, Saratoga, obviously, up here, Del Mar, but places like Ellis as well, developing the new fans for the future. And I just wanted to bring you on to tout opening day and the season coming up because, again, I think over the past 4 or 5 years at least, the program out there has been very good and worth watching for two-year-olds going forward and whatnot. And this year, and over the last couple of years, but this year even more, as we've talked about, very familiar names out there as well. So, Jenny, appreciate the visit. We wish you and everybody good luck this afternoon on opening day and going ahead, and we'll talk again in the future.
Sounds great. Anytime, Seth. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well. Jenny Reese, Kentucky HBPA, and also working in the media department over at Ellis, opening day today at Ellis Park. And again, it's fun racing, and it's nice racing, nice summertime track, and they have a nice little stakes program. The two-year-olds over the past few years have been worth watching as we progress through the summer and then into the fall as well. So take a look at Ellis as we get into the next few weeks and into the summer. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Don't forget today here at the Clubhouse Racebook, Match Bet promotion. Come on down, enjoy all the racing action. You can grab a little lunch down here if you'd like to, but just hang out, sit in the air conditioning. Let me emphasize that. We have the AC cranked up. How do I know? Because my fingers are frozen in the TV studio every day. We have it cranked up extra for some reason back here. But it is very comfortable. Your fingers won't be freezing. It's actually warmer. I walk out to the front side sometime to warm up. But the AC is on. It will be very comfortable as compared to the Triple H's today outside. So come on down. Enjoy the air conditioning. And as I say, you can catch some lunch. But obviously watch all the races. And maybe win a little extra dough with the Match Bet promotion today. All of that here at the Clubhouse Racebook. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. But again, about an hour and a half or so, a little more than that maybe, but we'll be back on with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon, taking you through some of the live action. So that should be fun. And as always, I appreciate your tuning in. I'm Seth Merrill. And again, Racing Across America wrapped up for this week. Don't forget, always want to remind you, we have the weekday podcast, the Daily Report. You can check that out on our social media channels at about 10 o'clock every weekday morning. That kind of lines you up for the day, and we hit on a little news and whatnot. So you can check that out as well. I'll tout that. But as far as Racing Across America, as I say, wrapping up for this weekend. But as far as TV, I'll be back this afternoon with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.